All right, this is the side two of the second interview with Mr. Caswell. So in terms of making trails then, it sounds like that the tools that you were describing were mainly that you were clearing brush and trees away.
Yeah.
Then how did you do something to smooth the trail out for walking?
And I should have added in shovels and pickaxes and rakes, because that was all the things that you would use. And there would be the truck would come as near as he could to wherever the trail was being worked on, and then you would just continue on with hand tools. And we're talking a trail that would be probably 4 feet wide or 5 feet wide or something for footpaths. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what they were. And as far as the rocks and the after you get the trees out of the way, well, then you would use a can dog or a pry bat to try to remove any rocks that had to be removed so that you could level it. And there might have to be gravel hauled in to fill some of the low spots. So then the dump truck would bring that to the nearest point that they could to that trail, and then dump the gravel, and you would shovel that into the wheelbarrows and wheel that into wherever you needed it to dump and level it. But there again, everything was done by hand, basically.
Was the path of the trail marked like with paint or ribbons, or how
They had it laid out beforehand of just the bends and so forth that was going to be by either marking the trees with a spot of paint or whatever, or a ribbon or whatever there was. And of course these bosses that were in charge of all of this knew about these trails anyway. And then they just passed that information on to us as we worked on them.
Okay. So how much did terrain affect the way the work was done and the equipment used?
The what now?
The terrain, like how steep it was or
did... Well, they would try to, as they were laying these trails out, try to avoid anything that would be too hard to get around and so forth. In other words, if there would be a big outcropping of ledge or something that was going to be in the way, they'd try to detour around that so that we would take the easiest line of approach, more or less. And that's basically how they laid them out. And some of the trails, rather than going right in a straight line, might wind up with quite a few crooks and bends.
Okay, good.
Just to getting around objects that might be in the way.
Right, okay. Did seasonal changes in the weather affect work on the trails?
Oh yes,
yeah.
Yeah, because if it was rainy weather or snowy weather or whatever, then your work would be concentrated in different areas rather than working on trails. I mean, it might be shoveling snow or burning brush if it was rainy and all that sort of thing. They would try to assign work areas or assign you work according to tied in with the weather concept also, as well as the different projects. So if it got too cold or rainy to do a certain thing, they might have something inside as far as cleaning some of the barracks or painting or whatever it might be.
Now, were you aware that there were any measures that were taken in building the trails to make use of any natural features on the trails? Let's see, for example, the path through the rock fall on Mansell Mountain. Are you familiar with that?
On what now?
Mansell Mountain.
I'm not familiar with it.
Okay.
Yeah, so I couldn't honestly say.
Okay. Well, you said that you did work with the terrain in order to make the path as walkable as possible.
Yes.
Did you often were there any examples of using the landscape? There were any natural features that you really wanted to emphasize, and so you'd use them in the paths or
I'm sure there was, but I couldn't honestly say at this point what they might be. But like I said, I think earlier that was kept in mind with all of your work, was if you had anything that was of value that would help the people that might be sightseeing or using that trail, then it would have been saved and made available for as a lookout point or whatever.
Now, did you were developing a national park. When you were working, were you sort of aware that you were building a national park, and did that affect any of the way that you know?
No, not really. We knew that we were working for the National Park Service, but to us kids, all it was something to do, and to keep you off the street, and be giving you a little bit of income and room and board, and that's basically what it was. You get paid, as I recall, I think $1 a day, and that was put into a fund that you would receive when you retired from that. With each month, they would give you a small allowance that you could use for different things that you might want to do, movies, whatever. But for $1 a day now, it doesn't sound like too much. But of course, back then, $1 a day was quite a lot considering. And right across from my camp, and I always remember this, although I don't remember their names, the lady, they had a farm right across the road, and she used to have like a little canteen where she used to sell homemade pastries, cookies, and that sort of thing. So of course the boys, including myself, a lot of times we'd run over there and get some of her homemade pastries.
Now, I don't recall that you said that you worked on any buildings. You didn't build any buildings.
No, I didn't. Although I'm sure some of the camps there were a lot of that involved, but our particular camp was mostly, like I say, just working on the grounds.
Okay, we could I think we could skip over the building part of it then.
Yeah.
And now I know that you said you were involved with putting in the what is it, the sewer line or whatever in seawall
Yeah.
for the campsites.
Yeah, over in the Blackwoods
Oh,
project.
Blackwoods. Oh, okay.
Blackwoods, yeah.
But you weren't. Were you involved in building any of the campsites, actual campsites there?
In other words, we were putting the foundations in for the Blackwoods campground project, and there were people that built. Now, these were the showers and restroom areas that we were doing. And my particular group was responsible for the foundation work as far as punching the holes through the concrete. And there again, now that was an outside contractor. You asked me earlier, okay, there was somebody there that was involved that had done the concrete work previously. And we in turn had to use those hand drills like we were using the trails to make these holes for the sewer hookups, the water hookups, and so forth through the foundations.
Okay. Okay, so there was an outside contractor who laid the cement slabs, the pads.
And the cement footings.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then so the only work that you did at the campsites then was involved with working with these installations.
Yeah, that's all I did.
Okay.
Now, and that was still going on when I got out
Okay.
In 1940.
Uh-huh.
So there was other things that happened after I had left that I wouldn't be familiar with.
Well, why don't you, I know you spoke a little bit about this at the last time we talked, but
Yeah.
would you give us some more details then about actually what it was like to work with laying these foundations then? Was the cement slab already poured and then you went in, or did you help with the pouring of the cement, or?
No, the cement slab and it would be the wall that's coming up above the slab, about probably 24 inches tall or whatever. Then we had to punch those holes through, and that's where I got an injury. I was holding the hand drill for one of the other workers, and he was hitting on that with a sledgehammer. Well, turning that hand drill, and of course, and you're leaning over, and all the protection you got's a pair of glasses, and one of the blows glanced off the long bar that I'm holding, ricocheted up and took me right on the edge of the hairline. So needless to say, I was out of work for a couple of weeks. And as I had said earlier, we had our own first aid
Yes.
hospital and for minor things. But there in the Black Woods, that was mostly just getting the basic things ready, where they were going to establish a park campground at a later point.
Mm.
And there was a lot of other people involved, and of course they had to install the flushes and all of that to get everything ready.
Mm-hmm.
But like I say, why I wasn't there when they completed the whole project, so
mm-hmm.
there's some of that I would know.
So when you were working on it, it was just the cement, just the slab, that, and then the little foot walls and that sort of thing.
That was just the basic beginning of it.
Okay, so that sometime after you left, then
Yes.
they built the walls and the roofs.
Yeah, and the roofs and all that.
To those buildings.
Yeah.
Okay. 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 All right, well then, why don't we move on to education and training? And I think you've already talked about which parts of, there's a question here about what was considered skilled labor, and I think that my understanding is that driving the heavy equipment was skilled labor.
Yes.
In any of the jobs. Anything
Yeah.
else in the jobs, the trails and the
No, it's like I said earlier, that any of the enlistees that came in that were qualified for any of those jobs, if they had been doing them in civilian life, we'll say like a truck driver or a bulldozer operator or whatever, then they would be assigned to that area as a skilled operator. And about the only people that wasn't enlistees were people that were hired as the ones that were in charge of all of the different functions of the camp. And like I said earlier, I think most of them were a military rank.
Mm-hmm.
If not, they were forestry. They were connected to the PAC service, a lot of them. So there were those were the people normally that we got all of our work orders and orders from.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think what they're looking for in this section though is what kind of training you might have received at the camp, if you had any education or training or if you, you know, got licensed or certified, did you receive any kind of training when you were there?
No, the only training or anything that I received was actually on-job training.
I remember, that's what you said, I remember
yeah.
that.
Now, I probably could have, because some of the boys wanted to become truck drivers and they wanted to stay in for a while. Well, in order to do that, they had to pass certain tests. It was almost like passing a test nowadays, that you have a person that sets up your guidelines that you have to go by, and then they have another person go out and actually watch your shift gears, because everything then was standard transmissions, mm-hmm. and to find out whether you would qualify for a license. And that's the only other thing that I can think of right offhand that I could have trained to do that if I had wanted to stay in. But where I had already planned on going in the military, that's why I was discharged from the CCs mm-hmm. after a 6-month tour. Mm-hmm. And that's what we usually signed up for, was 6 months to begin with. Mm-hmm. And then they renewed it each 6 months.
Okay. Well, if you didn't have any particular training, then probably we don't need to ask any more of these particular questions. Let's move on to the recreation section. I know you've addressed this a little bit in the beginning, but we'll get a little more detailed here. How do you remember that you spent most of your leisure time?
Well, most of it, I think, was spent. Usually a group of us would, after hours, after the dinner hour in the evening, we'd go into Bar Harbor. And there were a few of the boys that had their own vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
That they were old enough to own a vehicle, and it would be packed at the campgrounds, and in the evening after duty, then we'd bum a ride in. If not, we'd hitchhike in
mm-hmm.
into the city and either go to a band concert in the park there or different activities that was around town. They used to have all kinds of different functions, social gatherings or socials, and normally the CC boys were invited. And of course, a lot of times you would get acquainted with a girl there and meet her parents. And that way you had an opportunity to become familiar with a lot of things that were going on that you wouldn't have known otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
But and then on a weekend, if you wasn't required to stand duty either on fire lookout or working in the kitchen or whatever, then you could go home, do whatever you wanted to do if you could find a way to get there.
Yeah.
Either hitchhiking or somebody donate your ride, because normally you didn't have too much spending money. But that's about all that we used to do with our leisure time.
Mm-hmm. And did you go into town every night?
No,
no. How many times a week did you go?
Oh, probably we always used to try to on the weekends, and then maybe once or twice during the week.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of the time, you would hang around your barracks playing cards or just kidding around, telling stories or whatever. You might rehash the whole day's happening that you might have, where you had worked and what happened, and just Well, I don't really know how to describe it, but
Oh, now was that in your barracks or was that in the rec hall?
In the barracks or sometimes over in the rec hall, but a lot of times, if you chummed around with four or five people, your buddies all the time, then a lot of times we just hang out right in our bunk area, and if you wanted to go over in the rec hall and. Of course, they had different games there, dart boards, and just minor stuff that probably today that nobody would be interested in doing, but that's basically what it was. It's just a little something to take up your time, and then, of course, there were books and a small library that was available that if you wanted to read, or anything like that. I mean, it was there and it was available if you wanted to use it.
Okay. What about sports?
Well, they had their own different teams, like baseball teams, and well, the one that stands out in my mind is baseball. And softball, and a lot of times you'd compete against another camp, like Southwest Harbor, where it was just a short distance from where we were. Ours was the Eagle Lake camp in Bar Harbor, right, real close to Eagle Lake, and that'd be mostly it, I guess. It would be baseball and. Saw different things like that.
And but you didn't play on the team, or did you?
There wasn't really any team like you would look at it now. It was a group of boys. If you wanted to play, well, we'll go over and play Southwest. But they didn't have any
I
regulation
see.
team or anything.
And so, but you did you play baseball then?
I did a few times, yeah. It was something to do, and at the same time, give you an opportunity to see the other camp.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so there was baseball, you said.
Yeah.
And anything else?
yeah
Basketball,
well
volleyball?
I can't remember basketball, but I'm sure there must have been other things, but the only one that really stands out in my mind is baseball.
And so you did play the Southwest camp. Did you play any town teams?
No,
No,
no.
or town groups? Okay. And I know that when I spoke with someone else who wasn't used to go swimming with a bunch of guys in the evening. Did you do something like that?
Yeah, well, I've done that. We used to go to down to Eagle Lake and in the lakes right near the camp. Of course, I was involved in a lot of like to swim anyway. I used to go to Camp Jordan before that, YMCA camp, and where I learned all my swimming and boating skills was at Camp Jordan. So we used to go to the beach and down to the different lakes there and go swimming, but it wasn't really a big thing like it is now. I mean, as far as going and laying out and all that, like you see now, like down to Sand Beach.
Now, you were there for 6 months, and so if you went swimming, then you must have been there in the summer.
Yeah.
Did you?
No,
One man that I spoke with actually did a lot of skiing and snowshoeing too.
yeah.
But were you able to do?
No, I done some snowshoeing because it was in skiing. Because it was in December when I got done, the last of December. And yeah, they had skis and snowshoes that were both available. And yeah, and we done that, but.
Okay, what about crafts and hobbies? What kinds of opportunities were available for hobbies and that sort of thing at the camp?
Well, I'm sure that there must have been some that was available, but I don't recall myself being involved in any of it, so I wouldn't dare say.
Okay. And music and theater? Were you telling me that somebody played some instruments there?
Yeah, there's, well, like some of the boys, you know, might own a guitar or a mouth harp. And a lot of times over in the rec hall that they might have a little get-together like that, anybody that could play an instrument as a way to consume some time and meet other people. And that was basically it. Other than the other music, like I said, in town, in Bar Harbor, they used to have some of the band concerts there. And it would be people that was on stage there in the Village Green, they call it, that we used to, when we'd be in town, we'd listen, listen to.
But those were town people that were performing?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that the camp had a library. Do you remember what kinds of books or newspapers or magazines were there?
I don't know if you'd really call it a library. It was books that were available. It was a room that, I mean, they didn't have anybody who was assigned steady as far like a librarian. But there was books that would be available of all different kinds. Anything from Western stories to, well, one that sticks out my mind was Anne Gray. Was a well-known writer for Western novels, and in fact, one of my favorites. And all different kinds. I honestly couldn't say what all kinds were involved, but just about anything that anybody would want to find. And probably at that time there was probably authors that might be able to compete with Stephen King, although we'd probably never know.
Yes, we'll never know. What about newspapers and magazines? Was there anything like that available?
Well, there were newspapers. And I think that was more the local.
And what about the camp newspaper? Did you have a camp newspaper?
It seemed like we did, but it's so faint in my mind that I wouldn't honestly dare to commit myself on that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Now, we have a section on camp and town connections. Now, you've already talked about the fact that you go into Bar Harbor frequently for entertainment.
Yeah.
And you told me how often you went in. You mentioned band concerts and socials. Did you mention movies and...
There was a theater there that that we used to go to occasionally if we had spare money. A lot of times we'd try to sneak in without paying.
How'd you do that? But
a lot of times that didn't work either.
Uh-huh.
But we did go to movies occasionally.
How much did movies cost?
Probably a dime or a quarter, maybe.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Was there a bar? Did you go to a bar?
No. I'm sure there was, but you know, at my age, I wasn't involved.
Okay. Now, were there any particular places that catered to CCC men?
Well, the whole town was. Well, they more or less welcomed the boys. I mean, they all thought highly of what we did there at the camp. And most of the boys were good and as far as not getting in any trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So it never caused any problems with the civilian people. So they all seemed to like the CC boys and got along fine.
Okay. That's good to know. Did you I know you said that it was possible to get to know local people through doing this, the socials,
yeah.
going to the socials. Did you get to know a lot of local people that way?
Well, not a lot, but I did get to know some of them, but I really couldn't remember the, you know, I couldn't give any names.
Mm-hmm. Was that mainly through the socials, or was there another way that you got to know local people?
Well, through the socials, and like I said, that some of the young people that you met at the socials, they in turn introduced you to other people, and that was more or less how it was arranged.
Okay. Now, so the picture you're painting is that the people in Bar Harbor really welcomed the CCC
players. Well, I mean, they were friendly with us.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to go out on a limb and say that they laid out the red carpet or anything, but I mean, you always seem to be welcome in anything that we're going on.
So you weren't aware of any particular animosity conflict?
No.
Okay, because, I mean, some people have talked about there being a real tension between
yeah.
the camps.
I don't recall that. No. In my particular case, and the four or five friends of mine that were used, a lot of times it would be three or four of us would be together most of the time. Mm-hmm. And I don't know of that be of that happening in any cases that we're involved in.
Mm.
All of the people that we knew were real friendly and welcome us back again the following night or whenever we could get another pass.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Good. Now, let's see. How about the relationship to the summer residents? Now, because I think we were mainly talking about the locals, as the people who live there year round. Did you have a different kind of relationship, or did you have any relationship with summer residents?
No, not really. No, and the only people that we get to know real well at all was just, as I say, the people that had the little business across from the camp and got to know them quite well and their family. But other than that, well, we didn't really get to know in depth any of the other people. Only enough to say hi, hello to, or whatever, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Now, in terms of your lasting impressions of this, when you left the CCC, did you go right into the military? What was it, the Army or the Navy that you went into?
I didn't go right into the military until I got out of there in December 1940, and then that same year, or the following year, is when I went into the military. So my impression of the CCs was that it helped me a lot in the respect of going in the military, because like I've said earlier, your basic rules and regulations is almost like the Army with the CCCs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I learned a lot from the short time I was there that helped me later on as far as meeting different people and the different things that I was going to have to face over the coming years.
Mm. Yeah, we talked about that earlier. Now, when you went into the military, what was it the Navy?
No, it was Army.
You went into the Army.
Yeah.
Can you just briefly outline your war experience then?
On what now?
On the Army. What was your experience in the Army? You went in 1940.
Yeah.
So you probably...
Well, I had a brother that was in the National Guard in Millinocket.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time I was in the CCs, I also belonged to the National Guard in Bangor, the 152nd Field Artillery.
Okay.
Well, my mother says, "Well, gee, what?" And then all of a sudden they're going to send the Guard away for a year's compulsory training. So that's why I got out of the CCs, is because I knew I was going to have to leave for a year. Well, my mother kind of talked me into transferring to Millinocket, to the company I, that my brother belonged to. And that happened to be infantry. Not realizing what infantry was at that point in time, where I was with the field artillery, I'd been better off to stay, I found out later, but anyway. We were going to go away for a year's compulsory training, which we did, and we were assigned to Camp Blandin, Florida. In the meantime, war broke out. So that means we knew that we were going to be gone longer than a year. That was when the song was become popular, "I'll Be Back in a Year, Little Darling." And that's where that arrived from. Oh. Was due to the National Guard going to leave for 1 year.
Uh-huh.
But it didn't materialize. So I was inconsequently almost six before I got out. I took my basic in Camp Blandin, Florida. I was in the infantry. Then we went on Louisiana maneuvers. Then shipped into Shelby, Mississippi. And from Shelby, Mississippi, went to Fort Ord, California, then overseas. I went into the South Pacific.
Mm.
And I was acting transportation sergeant for quite a lengthy time, although my rank was actually a T5. Which is a technician corporal. And then I was in four major campaigns over in the Pacific, which was Guadalcanal, New Georgia and Mondaradrome, and New Guinea, and the Philippines. I come home in the Philippines, and I got out in the late part of 1945, mm-hmm. after the war was over. If I would have stayed in, which I thought about afterwards, you know, of course, I was awful happy to get back to the States anyway, because I'd been over there almost 3 years.
Yeah.
But if I would have stayed in and not come back, I didn't have any choice, but we come back on rotation on point. My division kept on going and went into occupational duty into Japan. I would have liked to have done that had I known.
Mm.
But when I had the opportunity to come home on points, I didn't even think about anything else. But anyway, that's what it was as far as going from one service into the other.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, they both kind of coincided with one another, because your rules and regulations, everything was almost identical.
Mm-hmm.
As far as keeping your bunk looking right and your shoes shine and everything else was almost the same.
Mm-hmm.
I think more or less the CCs, when it was first formed, was to help the kids get off the street and have something to do and be able to get a little self-confidence, and at the same time prepare them in case they wanted to go in the military.
Right. We have just a little bit of time left on this tape, and I just want to ask you one last quick question, which is, have you maintained contact with people that were in your unit, your CCC unit, over the years?
Yes. Actually, they're getting fewer, as you can understand, each year. But down at the Cole Museum, when we, in fact, this past Memorial Day, the CCCs led the parade in the convertibles. Of course, I'm capable of marching, but when they told me I was going to ride in a convertible, I didn't argue with them. But there's several of them that I meet each year, and if I don't see them on the street, usually I see them down there, because they come in from the Lewiston, Portland area, and I have a friend in the Bradley area. And a couple in the Old Town area that's still alive and still active. But as far as trying to keep in contact with them, as far as writing, I don't, but different reunions as we go to. the different things that happening down at the museum. When, of course, Galen Cole sets up a lot of this stuff and tries to bring all of these groups together. And we feel quite fortunate that he's able to head up the different organizations.
Good, good. Well, that answers all our questions. This is the end of the second tape with Mr. Simon Caswell.